Well, good morning to everybody. Thank you for coming. Thank you for joining us in this symposium that we are starting today, you know. Some time ago, with some colleagues here at University of Girona, that we are conducting a project about Torno reform and Torno novelty things that could be applied to Spanish law. When we decided that to start this symposium was because we were worried to see how difficult it was to amend or to reform tort law in Europe, you know. We had seen some projects like, for instance, the French projects in 2005, later on, you know, that all the general part of obligations, it was a success, but in the case of the tort law, always lagged behind, you know. Thanks to things that have happened, we have had some successes in some countries, and finally, in some countries, tort law reform has been carried out. But in the others, the reform is still waiting. You know, so we are going to discuss why is tort law reform so difficult, and the questions to be examined are more or less, you can see them in the long relations that we have, and we'll try to exchange different points of view. So thanks for coming, and the president is going to be Professor Koch, you know, and I'll see you later on.
Well, good morning also from my side, and I would like to abuse my surprising position here to immediately thank Mikel for the initiative. Can I do something to turn it on? So, good morning from my side as well. As I said, I will abuse my position as a chair to thank Mikel for the initiative. This is a very hot topic for my country at the moment. It has warmed up again, let's put it like this, after being a cold topic for a while, as you will hear in the afternoon. But I would suggest we just start the tour de table, essentially, and this morning we start with, well, not quite perfectly B in the sense of Baltic states, and Julia Kirsieni from Vytautas Magnus University in Kaunas, Lithuania, will talk about the developments there. So you have the floor.
Good morning, everyone. My gratefulness and appreciation for this event. It's an honor for me to present here. Very shortly about myself, I am from Vytautas Magnus University, from Kaunas, it's Lithuania. And I have 25 years experience of teaching private law topics from just graduating law school at Vytautas Magnus University. But now I am also serving as Vice Rector for Research at my university almost for 8 years, and before 8 years as Dean of Law, Faculty of Law, and practicing as notary and attorney for 5 years, and participating in different bodies like Court of Honor for Judges for 8 years, and etc. So now I would like to go directly to my topic. And I would like to begin from historical circumstances, but before just beginning, I want to stress out that I tried to find, first of all, how much information is in Scopus database, because they have now AI tool. And I just asked AI of Scopus what you know about reform of tort law in Baltic states. And actually, there were almost no information. So it means that there is possibility to publish and to be referred in Scopus, and maybe it will be more available for a broader public. Actually, while preparing for this presentation, I mostly used actual information, and it is reports of countries, which is very good job done during all this period, and also digests of which was also a project initiative moderated by ECTIL. It's European Center of Tort and Insurance Law. So my main sources are for materials that will be presented are from these reports, from digests, and from some fragmented articles. So in terms of historical circumstances, of course, the regaining independence in 1990, it was Lithuania was the first. In May of the same year, Latvia regained independence, and next year in August, Estonia, and it was of course very important for shaping tort law reform as a historical circumstance, and in 2004, Baltic states has become a member states of the European Union. After Soviet type socialism, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, as many other countries in Central Eastern Europe, they had challenged how to transition from centrally planned economies to systems that are founded on free market principle and private property rights. And this transition and reform process for every country, I suppose, in this region is different, it's unique, and I would argue, actually, that for Baltic states, the reform of tort law and the reform of civil law was not only the most rapid in terms of timing, but also the most transformational. And I will try to convince you during this presentation that it happened. And it happened because of all these three countries are small jurisdictions, and even if they often called sisters or are seen as one region, small region in Europe, but actually we three countries have different languages, have different cultures and historical circumstances, in a sense, and we have even different religions. Lithuania, for example, used to feel more linked to Poland than to Latvia or Estonia historically. So, but in this period, probably it is more similar to these countries. So, for these three countries. It was not, like creating unique rules for tort or civil law. It was the period where they adapted or transplanted rules and techniques from foreign. It's from Western European, American, transnational models. And Europeization has been the most significant determinant of legal change in this region. Indeed, these countries saw this Soviet occupation as a rapture from their earlier legal tradition. So the creation of civil code and adoption of private law had kind of symbolic value. It's not only about constitution, how countries return to their independent state, but also about private law. And I would also argue that civil code in this country is seen as symbolic document for their statehood. In terms of Soviet occupation, of course, all these countries had unified Soviet code, which largely was identical. And there were disregarded any other sources of law, like legal principles, customary law, case law. Judges, they were just formal executors of state-enacted laws, and any considerations of case law of other jurisdictions, especially so-called capitalist countries, was completely unacceptable. So legal education was very limited, no comparative, no private international law. I'm telling this in order you would see how what transformational experience we had during this period. Actually, there were no clear differentiation between private and public law. So for Lithuania, it took a decade to work to have this Civil Code of Republic of Lithuania, which was adopted in July 18, 2000. In drafting of this code, I should say it is one of the most complete and recent examples of private law codification now in Europe. The inspiration was taken from various sources, from various legal systems, but including Germany, France, Italy, Switzerland, Japan, but mostly Civil Code of Netherlands, 1992, and Civil Code of Quebec, 1994, were the main sources of inspiration in drafting process. Similarly, Estonia and Latvia, they had their own path of legal reform. Estonia had drafts of civil code of 1939, but it was reprinted in 1992. But they agreed that it is not possible to enter with this code into force without change. So they decided to go step by step codification of socialist 1964 code. So the validity of this code was lost in step by step. Law of property was adopted in 1993, general part in 1994, law of obligations in 2001, and a reform was accomplished in 2002. The inspiration were from German civil code, Dutch, Quebec, Danish, French, Italian, Australian, Russian, and Swiss models. And Latvia took a completely different approach. They reenacted the Civil Code of 1937. It's interwar period before Soviet occupation in 1992. It was an exceptional solution because it was the old code. And of course, they needed major changes, and they followed German civil model in large extent. And this code consists of 2,400 articles and four books: family, inheritance, property, and obligations. As for timing of these reforms, it was, I suppose, very short but very good timing. Baltic states were kind of pioneers in this regard in Eastern Europe. This 2000 period and all these really very transformational reforms of civil code was accepted almost without any resistance. Yeah, even now I should say that some articles of Lithuanian civil code are not implemented because of resistance, and we need some additional legal acts to implement them. But yeah, resistance now is much higher than in 2000, in the year of 2000. So now I go to a few cases just to illustrate how this reform was going, like in three stages. I will present that: inception, maturation, and culmination, probably. I will take probably some extreme cases in order to provoke the thought. And I would begin from a Latvian case. It is the situation was in 2004. The applicant visited Jūrmala City Police Department and wanted to submit application. But upon exiting, she was arrested by police inspector, and she was ordered forcible admission to psychiatric unit, and she was detained until the next day. Unfortunately, this detention was unjustified, and the health care and quality control inspector reviewed the circumstances, and then applicant wanted to receive some compensation for non-pecuniary damages. And the final decision in this case was only in 2009, and I just wanted to show this example that even if the reform of legal acts is made, or restoration of independence was more than 10 years ago or 20 years, the thinking habits, they do not change in one night. And even now we have sometimes discussions about culture of debate, how this trauma of Soviet occupation impacted accepting of different opinion, inclusivity, labeling, because Soviet psychiatry was misused to suppress dissent. In the slide you also see the name of the article, which is telling about how Soviet citizens should be happy about everything, and if they are dissenting, so it means they are ill, mentally ill. Other cases that I wanted mention, and they are related to post-Soviet privatization of state property, of cultural heritage. And in this regard, of course, strictly speaking, the problem of corruption is on the scene. And here I wanted just to mention one Lithuanian case. In 2004, the building, very expensive building, was purchased, and this property was located on a prestigious seaside resort near the Baltic Sea, and it was built with valid building permit, with construction project, with valid detailed plan. And construction was completed in 2004. But later on, in 2006, Prosecutor General initiated judicial proceedings to annul the detailed plan and construction permit. And in 2009, the court ordered to demolish the building. So the buyer bought the building, which was constructed illegally, even if all documents were right at the moment. So see that even in such situation, this building was demolished indeed, despite of price and despite of later on claims against state. In terms of cultural heritage, not all owners which privatized cultural heritage for pennies, we should say, in post-Soviet privatization process, they are good owners. And we have, that's why, changes in the law. But legal actions against such negligence against of cultural heritage remains quite scarce. And Soviet buildings, we call them Khrushchevki, also is one of unique features of post-Soviet countries in Vilnius, for example, at the moment we have 4,000 such buildings, and they need renovation. Renovation is going too slow. And for example, in one of the cases, it was a question who should be liable for damages caused by defect or collapse, or it was damage made by water pipe system. Is it owners? Because in such buildings, we can have kind of from 4 owners to 100 owners. It depends on the building. Is it liable owner or administrator of the building? By the law, by civil code, there is strict liability of owner or keeper of a structure for damage caused by its defects or collapse. But court noted that primary liability lies with the owners, and it makes things sometimes very difficult if there are 100 owners of the building and most of them are of old age. So the problem will go on, I suppose, even later. And the last slide about inception. Also some cases that remind us that we have unfriendly neighboring states. Lithuania has borders with Belarus and with Russia, as you know. And it is now probably especially relevant because of unprovoked Russian invasion to Ukraine and hybrid attacks, including cyber attacks, fake news, terrorist acts, explosions, illegal migrants using as a weapon, propaganda, provocations becomes kind of everyday events. And here we also have some older cases, because we can expect more cases in future, especially because of illegal migrants, which are used as a weapon in hybrid war. But it was a case which happened in 2009. Actually, the damage was environmental, because the unidentified third party damaged the oil pipeline. And 4,000 tons of diesel fuel was spilled into a river. And the court decided in this case that the total liability of owner or possessor of dangerous object or hazardous object has no fault, strict liability, and should cover the damage, and it was sufficient to establish wrongfulness, damage, and a causal link. But I believe that in this circumstances we can also expect more developments in this regard. So I go to the second stage. I go to maturation. Of course, it's natural that the process of joining the European Union made a big impact on these countries, and there are concepts that were especially developed during this period. It's non-pecuniary loss, state liability, non-judicial damage compensation scheme, consumer protection, strict liability, compulsory insurance, non-fault compensation schemes, and so on. But I mostly focus in my presentation on those. And yes, as a small jurisdictions, these Baltic states really relied on foreign models, and we, I suppose, learned a lot, especially in tort law, from ECTIL-initiated projects of digest and every year reports that are in Vienna just after end of Easter. On other case, it doesn't mean that everything is very similar in Baltic states. It's indeed very different. Transplantation provides much scope for creativity and national and room for diversity and national idiosyncrasies. Of course, there are general principles like private autonomy, freedom of contract, duties attached to ownership, and other values, but some choices depend on how social, how paternalistic, how business friendly, how empowering, and so on. Not only rules, but also implementation of these rules are, and you will see that it is indeed in many cases quite different approach in these countries. I would begin with state liability, because it is probably the most developed concept in the Baltic states during this period. State in the Soviet regime is always right. Now, especially in Lithuania, we see the trends and expectations in terms of state liability that expectations are increasing, And there are more duties, higher standards, liability for actions of third parties, and also the legislative responsibility. And in this regard, I just wanted to mention one landmark case in Lithuania, which includes all three concepts. It's features, I mean, and it was a case which notorious crime indeed, which shocked Lithuania in 2013. Victim was abducted from a bus stop in small town in Lithuania. She was raped and burned alive in the car. And despite calling the emergency number 112 10 times from car trunk, she could not be located due to technical limitations that prevented her number from being visible to emergency operator. Plaintiffs, it's her brother, mother, stepfather, grandmother, they already previously be awarded compensation from the perpetrators of the crime. But of course, compensation was not paid due to lack of resources. And so they applied against Republic of Lithuania, arguing that Republic of Lithuania failed properly implement Article 26 of directive about localization of emergency calls, even without SIM card. And Vilnius court referred a few questions to European Court of Justice, clarifying whether location of calls from devices without SIMs and mandated whether this directive mandated location of such devices. And the court agreed that a directive required accurate location service for emergency calls, and the Supreme Administrative Court indeed, in this case, in 2019, awarded the unprecedented compensation of 250,000 euros for failure to implement this directive. And for this situation, it means that for actually also action as action of third party was involved, and legislative responsibility is also discussed, but the compensation of the prior highest award was 80,000 euros. So in Lithuania, actually, we have this state liability very strict, and it's becoming even more strict, and standards are growing. However, in Estonia and Latvia, should be mentioned that it is not strict liability, and it is not characterized like that. And you should prove also the fault of officers in that in such cases. The liability of a state will be mentioned in other cases as well, in other contexts, as you will see. But going on with strict liability, the concepts of professional responsibility, like medical negligence, service providers, lawyers, employers, like notaries, were mostly developed. And many times said that professional liability could be incurred for any form of fault, even the slightest omission, negligence, or failure to observe professional duty. The same with employers. Sometimes in Lithuania, we are discussing that it seems like strict liability is becoming the general rule. It's not like exception of the rule, but it's become. We have more cases with strict liability, the question is it good for customers? Yes. Is it good for judges? Yes, it is easier to decide in many cases. But is it good for businesses? And is it really based on risk theory? And how about contributory negligence and other factors mitigating responsibility? In this regard, I would mention the case of water park liability. It is like a very straightforward case when the client was damaged during his recreational activities in a water park. And courts were very straightforward and said that park equipment is inherently dangerous and the owner could not fully control the risk, so he is responsible in any case because it is a potentially hazardous object. But the question is whether water park risk is should be considered as and is the same like electricity and nuclear power, like use of explosives, poisonous materials, steam and water boilers, pressure vessels, elevators, and so on. So indeed, we need more discussion about this strict liability and how it could work. And other concept that was very much developed, indeed from zero, in Baltic states, it's non-pecuniary damage. Of course, these criteria for pecuniary damage, like severity of the harm, duration of suffering, impact on the victim's life, other relevant factors were much discussed, but also sums that were awarded. We are observing that, like, growing sums from, like, not like 10% or 20%, it's like 200%, 300% from during this period, from, for example, 2009 to this. Time. So especially, I would say, again, Lithuania likes this, goes to this trend. In this regard, I would mention also the table that was as a summary of court practice regarding compensations in Latvia. Published, and here there is like table from where courts say summarized which sums were awarded in cases, in criminal cases, and in administrative cases, and in Latvia, for example, for murder, and it is published in 2012, so I believe now. Now even the awarded sums are higher. So for murder is from 1,000 to 70,000. For intentional serious bodily injury is quite the same. and for infliction of deaths in traffic accidents, for example, from 1,400 to 50,000 euros. I go to the third stage from maturation to culmination. And we see here that strict liability models go to non-fault, non-judicial damage compensation schemes. Damages made for patients. And Latvia was the first of Baltic states which introduced non-fault, non-judicial damage compensation scheme for patients. It was in 2011. In Lithuania, this happened in 2019. Prior to this law, damages were primarily covered through insurance premiums. But as an argument for this law, it was observed that during 2013-2017, clinics paid more than 2 million euros to insurance companies, and compensations to the patient was only 160,000 euros. The system was good for insurance companies, but not for clinics or patients. And in Estonia, we still have the old system, or how to say, is different system from Latvia and Lithuania. The process is usual, involves proving medical negligence, legal action, or claim with insurance provider, and the system is as usual. So it's different from Latvia and Lithuania. One more topic I wanted to mention maturation to culmination step, it's about consumers. I believe that consumers and economic interests of consumers reflect broader as a democratic rights of citizens. Indeed, if consumer rights are regulated, protected by effective institutional system, it can contribute to state's democratic order and citizens' trust in the state. And in this regard, I want mention energy crisis and energy consumers, which was a very recent crisis following Russian invasion to Ukraine. A few years ago, the prices of energy in Baltic states, they skyrocketed. It was also increased by 200, 300, 400% in prices. At the same time, we had in Lithuania the process of liberalization of the energy market, and customers should have choose their service provider. This energy market is always very also politicized in Eastern European countries, because we are used to be very dependent on Russia. Customers become particularly vulnerable due to informational noise, lack of experience and knowledge. But a framework for protecting energy customer became very important. And Lithuania, we have three institutions that are related. It's National Energy Regulatory Council, it's Consumer Rights Protection Authority, and its municipality bodies. So this institutional framework indeed worked in order to to help consumers to protect their rights. So I will try to be more quicker. And yeah, it's I go before conclusions to the last slide. It's other concepts that really we are influenced by European legal frameworks. It's GDPR, Motor Vehicle Insurance Directive, Travel Packages Directive, and so on. And of course, we have cases in this regard, but because of lack of time, I will skip this, and I go directly to the conclusion. So I have two, indeed, conclusions from this presentation, that civil codification, yeah, as I said and argued in the beginning, was probably in Baltic states the most rapid and had the biggest transformational impact. And civil codification has symbolic value in Baltic states as a document also witnessing the statehood of these countries. And as small jurisdictions, they transplanted a lot of ideas, rules, doctrines from foreign, like Western Europe, like also transnational models from Quebec, for example, for efficiency reasons, and timing was very good for that. And despite the underlying principles, we still have a lot of diversity in these countries, and it depends on how this implementation of these rules are paternalistic, business friendly, social, inclusive. And now we see on the institutional level that there are these non-judicial institutional frameworks getting more and more more force, and also two quite inconsistent trends on substantial level. On the one side, it is becoming these private relations becoming more inclusive, empowering, participatory. I mean, sharing and so on. But from the state also, we expect higher standards, mean that we expect state to be paternalistic. So it kind of makes those strands inconsistent. And to consider society like, treat like, not very responsible, let's say. Yeah, it's and this rules of strict liability and how they are applied indeed show this trend. So thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Julia. Are there questions in the audience? Yes, Matthias, please.
I have a question, but I would like to pose this question after several, because I would like
okay.
to address the same question to several.
Save the question. If there is no immediate question, just let me pose one question by abusing my power as the chair. You mentioned the transition, particularly in the field of professional responsibility, towards a stricter or even strict liability. Was that done through reversing the burden of proving fault, or was it shifted to a different statutory basis? What was the path towards those developments?
Statutory basis from very beginning was the same, mm-hmm. but actually developments are made by the court practice. And even there are cases where courts state that it's a strict liability, no fault liability, mm-hmm. just and that's all.
Okay. Well, it's very creative at least. Thank you very much. Yeah.